there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon. Shh. Listeners, be very quiet. Jeff's sleeping.
Oh, what? Sorry, Jay. I was just watching Lake Alice. Yeah, I'm Jeff Searcy.
Oh, yeah. It'll do that to you. I don't know. We'll just get it out of the way. Let's deck the halls. We're talking about Lake Alice.
As listeners of Stocking Stuffers will know, we're talking about Lake Alice.
Released July 18th, 2017, straight to DVD.
Oh yeah.
That kind of quality sickos like the listeners and us look for.
Yeah.
Big budget release, not interested. No. Direct to DVD.
Yeah.
All the way.
It never bites us in the ass, Jay. Not once.
Yeah. Directed by Ben Milliken. That's all I have for him.
I'm sure we'll be hearing more from him, Jay.
Written by Stevie Jane Miller, who also plays Julia in this movie. I think Julia's the girl at the beginning.
Yeah. Can we charge her with a war crime?
Starring Caroline Tudor as Sarah Thomas, Brad Schmidt as Ryan Emerson, Lori Neamy as Natalie Thomas, Sarah's mom, Peter O'Brien as Greg Thomas, Sarah's dad, Brando Eaton as Tyler Patterson. So, you know, I think they've all kind of consistently gotten work, just nothing that we need to shout out. Then we get to Eileen Dietz, who plays Jane Patterson, and we will see her again in Merciless Christmas as Mama, in The Last Sleigh Ride as Grandma, and in Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 as Winnie Gilmore. But most importantly, she was Pazuzu in The Exorcist.
Ah, okay.
For those, like, handful of scenes where you see the demon flash up on screen.
Nice.
I think technically it's Demon Face is the credit, but it's Pazuzu. Patrick Birch plays Carl. Michael Seamus Wiles is Hank, the sheriff. Craig Reese is Deputy Reed. Kim Bennett is gas station attendant. Tyler Hurlburt is coffee shop patron.
Oh, yeah. He's going places, Jay.
James Mahoney as other coffee shop patron.
Oh, yeah.
This was shot in Tomahawk, Wisconsin.
Ooh.
It feels like it. It feels like I'm going to say this again later, but this feels like a small Midwestern. Like, they at least were able to capture that.
Yes, yeah, so I was going to say, if they did get one thing right about this, it definitely seemed like winter in Wisconsin.
Yep. And like, the town, like, when they go to the gas station, I'm like, yeah, that's the only gas station in town. Or maybe there's one out by, like, the highway or by the interstate, but that's the one that's in town.
They wanted to be authentic, Jay. It should have been a quick star.
I mean, I do have an issue with the authenticity of this movie. The type of beer that he gets lining Kugels. You're in fucking Wisconsin. Really. Get spotted cow, my dude.
I was going to say, that really stuck out to me, too. I'm like, isn't Wisconsin, like, famous for liking, like, three different kinds of beer?
I mean, lining Kugel is, I believe, a Wisconsin beer. But you're in Wisconsin. You can get lining Kugels fucking anywhere.
Exactly.
You know what you can't get anywhere? Fucking spotted cow.
Well, Jay's the beer expert, so I'll trust him on this.
You wouldn't like it, but it's great. Tagline, their first holiday together may be their last. Oh, hey, it's the same tagline on the DVD. Where to watch? You can buy a DVD.
You can watch it free on YouTube, which I would recommend to do before you bother buying it.
Or you can watch it on Peacock.
I believe it's also on Tubi.
So there you go. There's places to watch it at.
Yeah, it's literally ad-free in its entirety on YouTube.
People are banging down the door to get the ad revenue on Lake Alice.
It's amazing that there's like four different versions of it up, and not one has been copyright claimed, Jay.
I also think, hold on, I think it might have an alternate title, but I don't have proof of that.
I saw a few things thrown around where it might have been called The Cabin.
Okay.
But then people were saying that was too generic, and then I'm like, Yeah, because Lake Alice, that evokes so much more about the plot.
I want to say I saw one that was like cold water or something, like, or like cold water slaughter or something like that. And I'm like, but now I can't find that name, so we're just gonna go with Lake Alice. But I swear I at least saw a couple other names.
Yeah, I know the dad was on Breaking Bad. The boyfriend was from Dexter, which I guess that counts as star power. I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing. A lot of these people consistently have gotten work, like, over the years, which is impressive. Like,
I saw a few cast interviews where they were complaining about having to shoot in winter, which I mean, I was like, well, you're shooting. You signed up for a Christmas movie, so.
Right, exactly. You signed up to do a Christmas horror movie.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
Cassie, shut up!
Uh-oh. I think Cassie might have seen the movie as well.
Cassie, come here!
I saw an interview with the director, and he was like, I really think the horror of the situation comes through in stripping away the sense of safety that families often have in isolation. And I'm like, isolation makes you feel safe? I'd say that would make you feel more vulnerable.
Right.
Because what if something happens and we're out here in the middle of nowhere?
Like, I guess my wife's cousin lives in, like, kind of the middle of nowhere, the outskirts of St. Charles.
Oh, okay.
And she talks about, like, how comfortable she feels out there, and, like, she'll leave her blinds open and stuff like that. But her kids constantly tell her, I close all the blinds whenever you guys leave. Like, yeah. I turn on all the lights. I lock all the doors.
Yeah,
because we're in the middle of nowhere, and I've seen too many horror movies.
Well, it's like not even like a horror type thing. It's like, you know, what if you fell down and broke your leg or whatever? You're in the middle of nowhere.
Right. So, yeah, that's that personal experience. I have watched this once previously. I didn't remember what I thought of it. I remembered being confused by the ending. I'm still confused by the ending.
You know what honestly told me that this was going to be bad before I even watched it? Jay had watched it before, but he'd never mentioned it before it came up on the wheel, which means it was not that good. Because something tells me he would have talked about it if it was good.
Even if it was like good, bad.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah, even if it was like good, bad, or even mediocre, he usually at least mentions movies once in a while. But the fact that he never mentioned this before this told me, like, oh, this isn't going to be very good, is it?
Oh, boy. All right. Well, you ready to dive into it?
Yeah, I think so.
We get an exterior of the Sherwood Forest Bar and Grill, which is Surewood.
Swing and a miss.
And we see a group of people, or like groups of people, arriving and departing. A guy tells a girl with long brown hair, "See you at my place at 10. And someone else watches from the driver's seat of a car, and their gloved hand grips the wheel in anger.
Oh boy!
The girl then calls her boyfriend / husband. It's unclear. We learn later that it's like her boyfriend, and she says she was just out with some friends and that she won't see him tonight. So it must be her boyfriend.
Yeah, she's blowing him off. It seems like.
She gets to her car and drops her keys and hears some kind of like clanging like around her. And she kind of keeps like bending down to get like under her car to like get her keys. Mm-hmm. And then she hears something. So she stands back up, and this happens like three times.
Yeah. After the second time I was like, oh, surely it can't happen a third time, but it does.
And so then she finally like gets down like flat on the ground. The camera then cuts really good camera angle here. We actually get a camera view from like the keys perspective.
Yes.
Of her like reaching, trying to grab them. She like her hand like grazes them, and then she gets pulled away and screams, title card.
Lake Alice, which never, I don't think anybody ever actually says Lake Alice in the entire movie.
Nope. I don't even, is Lake Alice the name of the town?
That's
is
the name of the road.
Okay, that's right, yes.
So I'm guessing they were trying to make it like, you know, a reference to the other movies that are like whatever drive or avenue or whatever. But no, this literally no one makes mention of the fact, because they could have just had anybody like around town. Even be like, because the sheriff is a super nosy asshole, he could be like, oh, you guys still up there on Lake Alice Road?
Yep.
Nope, never.
We get some aerial shots of snowy Wisconsin and some upbeat music as Ryan is in the car with his girlfriend Sarah and her parents Natalie and Greg. He's meeting them for the first time. Ryan is filming everything through like a handheld camcorder. Greg says something like, Sarah tells me you're working on movies. Anything we've seen? And Ryan responds with, nope, I'm just getting started, which is a solid description of this movie.
Yep. Honestly, though, I almost wondered if he's done porn, because the way they look at each other and she smirks. Like, I wonder if he's taking videos of them fucking or something.
Maybe that...
he's working on his cinematography. That, at least that's the excuse he gave her.
They arrive at the family cabin as Greg and Ryan unload the car and kind of awkwardly look at each other in silence. They don't talk. They just...
Well, see, and that was really weird to me at first, but then you find out shortly after that, that this is the first time they've ever met him. This is not like, you know, a boyfriend she's brought around before. So it's like, yeah, I can understand that being awkward. It's like, okay, so some random weirdo is here at our Christmas cabin for Christmas.
Natalie and Greg leave to go into town. Once they are all settled, Greg gets pulled over by Sheriff Hank, who just ominously talks about wanting to know who's in my town.
Who passing through my town.
And that's it. That, like,
yeah, that's literally all that happens.
But like, is like ominously does that, and it's implied that like has some history with Greg and Natalie. Yes. But
it's almost like he's harassed them a lot or whatever. Which look, he's old, so he's probably been sheriff for a long time. But they immediately shoot him from below and with shadow on his face and ominous music whenever he shows up. So they're like, oh, so they're trying to, this must be red herring.
Red herring. Yeah. Back at the cabin, Ryan duct tapes his camera to the front of a four-wheeler and he and Sarah drive off. Sarah notices boot prints in the snow around the cabin, but brushes it off. Also, Ryan proposes to her.
Yes. Also, point of order, Jay, he starts this camera recording as they're driving out for the proposal on the four-wheeler. How the hell is this thing still recording by the end of the movie?
Right, that's a very good question.
The strongest camera battery in history.
And in the cold, no less. Yes. Batteries drain faster when it is cold out. And this camera battery lasts 3 days, maybe?
Potentially. I mean, I would be impressed if it lasts, like, in a real camera, 8 hours would be pretty impressive.
In town, Greg waits in the car while Natalie goes to the coffee shop and chats with Jane about Christmas, and Jane mentions that her son Tyler was asking about Sarah and how they used to be real close. She runs into Carl, who we get kind of like a jump scare. Oh, another red herring. It's Carl.
Oh, no, not Carl.
And she thanks him for plowing the driveway and invites him to stop by for Christmas. She also runs into the sheriff and this time also Deputy Reed. And like the sheriff's like, I'll have two scones. And then Jane's like, keep putting those away and you'll get pretty heavy, Sheriff.
I know. I was like, he ordered two scones and a black coffee. He's a normal sized man. What the hell is that about?
And also there's two of them.
Yes.
Like, potentially he's sharing with the deputy.
Nah, Jay, he's just a fatso.
Greg and Natalie arrive back at the cabin where Ryan and Sarah are waiting for them outside because the spare key is missing. Ominous. Sarah reveals the engagement ring to Natalie, who is excited, and Greg acts cold and distant about it. There's a lot of Greg acting cold and distant in this movie.
I also want to note that they mention the fact that the key is missing, but nobody reacts. All the moms like, oh, it must be somewhere, and then they never speak of it again.
Later on, Tyler and Jane arrive for a visit, and we get an ominous sound effect when Tyler sees Sarah's engagement ring. And he invites her and everyone to a show he is having tomorrow at the local bar. And when they leave, Natalie tells Sarah, Tyler won't be calling you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan asks Sarah about Tyler, and she says they've been friends since childhood and hooked up once before she left for California. And Ryan acts real jealous boyfriend about this.
Which I still don't understand, because ostensibly these people are both adults, and she didn't tell you about a guy she slept with one summer before she left her hometown. That doesn't seem like a reason to get upset.
Right.
Especially if you love her so much you propose to her.
Ryan overhears Greg having a boomer rant about him not having a real job, and they've only known each other for a year, and he only films movies. What if they need to pay the rent?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair to him, he did say he literally has done nothing of note when he asked him in the car. You might want to have like a sizzle reel or your projects you could show your future in-laws.
But I could just picture the advice that Greg would give Ryan. He'd say something like, what you need to do is you need to go down to the business and introduce yourself to the hiring manager.
Yeah, That's how I did it,
and things haven't changed. It shows initiative. Well, except you apply online for every job now. Nope, you gotta go down and introduce yourself.
I think a lot of people don't even understand that the people doing the hiring in a lot of these companies aren't even actual members of the company. They're a third-party HR company. And so it's like, yeah, going down there and talking to them doesn't do anything.
Oh, shit. I mean, yes, does it work sometimes? Like, well, absolutely. I mean, yeah, like it's smaller businesses?
I mean, yeah, if you're trying to get hired at, like, the local shop or whatever, yeah, going down and talking to the owner probably would be a good way to do that.
All right, you need to go to the studio execs and introduce yourself.
But yes, like, say if you're trying to get hired at, like, you know, a multinational corporation or even, like, a mid-level local, like, regional, like, let's say in the Midwest we have Hy-Vee. Walking in and just saying, hey, Hy-Vee manager, I want to work here. That's not how it works. You got to go through the application process.
Ryan, what you need to do is you need to go down to Blumhouse and ask Jason Blum to introduce yourself and tell him you want a job.
I mean, he's always on hand to hear pitches, so yeah.
Of course. That's probably why we have so. Jason Blum might have been a bad choice. You need to introduce yourself to Steven Spielberg.
No, Jason Blum is a good choice. If you want to do what the boomers are describing, Jay, you'd have to go to Netflix HQ.
Oh, good
and
point.
Then stop a random person in the hallway and they'll give you a limited series.
We need to do that.
We should.
Sarah offers up Ryan to go with Greg into town to fill up the truck before the snowstorm hits.
Yeah.
While going inside to pay and grab a beer, Greg runs into Deputy Reed, who has a weirdly threatening attitude towards Greg.
And randomly takes one of his unpaid-for beers and drinks it.
And so then Greg just casually puts that one on the shelf
and grabs
a different six-pack.
Yeah.
Reed goes outside and says to Ryan, "You're Sarah's fiance, huh? Is she still a firecracker?" And then just walks off. When Greg shows up, is Sarah some kind of, like, witch that has cast a spell over these men? No.
No. Everyone just acts suspicious for no reason, Jay.
Greg and Ryan leave. Oh, yeah, by the way, when the beer that he grabs, that's the six-pack, that's Lining Kugels. And come on, you could grab Spotted Cow. Greg and Ryan leave just for Hank and Reed to pull them over. And then they just drive away. So it's just some kind of, like, small-town sheriff-like threat, which then makes me think, like, oh, you could just do like a police home invasion movie where like the local police are like sick and tired of this family. And they're like, no, that's not really the direction we go at all.
No.
And Ryan asks, what about what Reed said about Sarah? And Greg says, Sarah was a bit of a rebel. You know, God forbid a girl have hobbies.
Yeah.
Back at the cabin, Greg and Ryan talk about the Packers. Hell yeah. And then on the TV, there's a news report about the missing girl from the beginning of the movie. And this is the only real reference we get to that. So why did it happen? There's a knock at the front door. It's Carl, the guy who shoveled their drive. And Greg is a dick and chases him off. Calls him a freak and shit like that.
Not only shoveled it for him, he brought them firewood because he heard it was going to be extra cold the next couple days. And he didn't want him to freeze.
And he's like, we got enough firewood, yeah. Carl.
Get out of here. And then as soon as he leaves, fucking freak weirdo. Everybody in the house is like, oh, yeah.
Ryan goes outside to get firewood and walks by the four-wheeler with the camera still taped to it and running. Yes. As he walks away, we switch back to the camera recorder angle and we see someone in a parka emerge from the woods and take the camera.
Oh, no.
Sarah goes to take a shower and we get a scene where the continuity doesn't match up. She goes in, is jump scared by her own reflection.
Yes.
The jump scare, she's covering her mouth. But the actual, but when it cuts back to her, she's like holding her heart. And I just, I always love like catching little visual continuity errors like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, while taking a shower, Sarah helps, or keeps hearing, knocking. She goes to check the window, but someone knocks on the door instead. And she's like, I said I was going into the shower. You know, you could have let me know before you had to use it or something like that.
I told people I was taking a shower. I asked if anyone needed this. Yep.
Sarah and Ryan fuck as someone records them outside the window.
Probably not the first time this has happened.
Next morning, Sarah and Ryan go for a hike and drink Wisconsin wine. That's a plot point of the movie. I wonder if the Wisconsin wine distributors.
Oh, they definitely. They donated some to this movie, Jay.
Ryan tells Sarah that he thinks Greg doesn't like him, and Sarah says that her dad is just being protective, and Greg says, well, I'm not going anywhere. We'll see.
Well, and can you really blame him? This is literally the first time he's ever met you, and you guys just announce randomly that you're engaged after 1 year of knowing each other.
at dinner and afterwards as they are unwrapping presents. Greg continues to be cold towards Ryan. Ryan, including buying him Cuban cigars, yes. And he's just like, cool, thanks.
He also, a weird way of just, he's like, I got a friend south of the border. And it's like, what does that mean?
He has like a drug.
Do you have a friend in, I mean, even if you have a friend in Mexico, how'd he get you Cuban cigars?
He has a drug smuggler. Someone continues to film them from outside. Should be noted that Natalie and Greg gave Ryan Sarah's grandfather's knife for Christmas. Mm. I thought this would come back. That's why I made that note. It does not come back.
Not once.
I thought he was going to like use it to stab the killer at one point or something. Nope, doesn't come back at all.
And he doesn't even really act grateful to have it either. He's like, oh yeah, cool. Thanks, guys.
Ryan and Sarah go to see Tyler's gig at the local bar. That's pretty much all that needs to be said about that.
It's terrible. And he lip syncs very badly.
Later, everyone is asleep at the cabin when someone starts pounding on the door. They don't see anyone, but the knocking moves around the house. Greg goes to get his gun while Natalie goes, I'll call the cops, and then says, the line is dead, but you can clearly hear the dial tone.
She also tells him, don't get a gun, that's dangerous. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding?
But I just thought it was so funny. The line's dead. That's not what the line being dead is. The line being dead is there's no sound.
There'd be no sound when you pick it up, yeah.
Greg goes outside with his gun. He walks around but doesn't see anything. Then we hear like a thunk sound, and blood starts pouring from Greg's mouth. Now, we hear the thunk sound. Everyone starts screaming, and then we see the blood start to pour from Greg's mouth, and then we see him fall to his knees and then to his like onto his face, and the axe buried, throwing axe buried in his back.
Another continuity error. Basically, they apparently know there's something wrong with him before we do.
Which, yeah, I like you do that reveal of them standing there kind of looking puzzled, like that he's not saying anything, and then he like starts bleeding or whatever.
I was very disappointed because he was the character I liked the best and he died first.
Everyone screams and runs inside as a person wearing a parka and a white ski mask approaches Greg and starts hacking at him with the axe as blood starts like painting the white ski mask.
Oh, and that's where you get your poster and DVD cover.
Yep. Natalie and Sarah and Ryan hide in the kitchen. But the power gets cut.
No, Jay. They don't hide in the kitchen. They shriek at the top of their lungs. And then Genius has the brilliant idea to go get a flashlight, you know. The one thing they might be able to do is sneak through the dark quietly and avoid getting murdered. And one of them chooses to light up a flashlight while the other two can't shut up.
And he also grabs their coat so they can make a run for it. This is our cabin. We should know our way around it better than the killers.
That's the thing is, like, you have no... The geography of this cabin is, like, a mystery. It's like the Overlook Hotel, Jay. You don't know where any rooms lead. Nothing makes sense.
As they are trying to escape, the killer just walks in through the front door.
Yes, I thought that was incredibly lazy, by the way. There's no reveal, no ambush or anything. Like, think they're almost going to get away. Nah, he just walks straight in.
And that's the thing. You would think, I don't know, like, do a thing where, like, they made a point of locking the door, so then the door gets unlocked by the spare key.
Yes.
But no, instead, it's just walks in through the front door. As like, so maybe the front door was never locked, which then makes them just look like doofuses.
Honestly, you know what would have made... Because this would have been the right era for it. Have some Ring cameras around and have them like be on their phones or whatever, shaking in the kitchen, and then they could see them walk past the cameras or whatever, and they don't know. That'd be a good part to reveal that there's two of them. Because there's obviously two of them.
Well, there's three of them.
Well, no, Jay. There's two of them until one random scene at the end.
We'll discuss that, I guess. But yeah, the killer walks in through the front door and just gets pushed to the ground as they run out.
Yes.
But then somehow everyone gets separated.
So threatening.
Sarah runs and hides in a duck blind, but Ryan finds her, and then they run off as the camera is recording them.
Oh, no.
Ryan and Sarah watch as Carl, the guy who plowed their drive, arrives with a gun and goes to investigate just to get inside and get his throat slit by the killer. And the camera records this from inside. So maybe there are three killers because someone was recording them outside and then there's a killer inside and a killer that...
Yes, if you're saying that the third guy is the cameraman for some of these shots, I guess. Yeah.
The killer gets in Carl's truck and drives away. Ryan and Sarah find Natalie hiding in the shower. They go to find keys when the killer with a non-bloody face mask or a non-bloody mask walks out, attacks Ryan, and then chases Sarah. Also, Natalie just disappears at this point. Mm-hmm. We get all three of them. The killer arrives, like, pushes Ryan down, chases after Sarah, and then I'm like, wait, where the fuck did the mom go? And I rewound it, and she just is gone.
No one cares, not even the people who made the movie, Jay.
Sarah gets ambushed from behind, and Ryan just finds her flashlight in the snow. Ryan hears tires screeching and a car crash, and he sees the family's SUV. Inside is Natalie, I think. It is Natalie, but at first I was like, I don't know who that is. Am I supposed to know who this lady is?
Yeah, it wasn't made really clear, but yes, apparently she was so scared she crashed the SUV for some reason.
And she has a real nasty wound on her head, and this is probably the only gore effect we get in the entire movie.
And it wasn't even that great.
We cut to Sarah tied up to a pole in the utility room of the cabin as the camera records her, and the killer walks up to her holding a knife and then knocks her out. Ryan walks into the cabin. There's a lot of just walking in and out of the cabin in this movie.
They make it feel so unthreatening to move around this place. It's like there's at least two killers we know at this point stalking around here. And people just casually stroll in and out. Because, like, literally, she gets captured not once, but twice. And both times he just walks in and gets her.
Ryan finds and unties her. And fireman carries her to the couch where she comes to. And they run away again, but run into Tyler just walking through the woods.
Oh, yeah. So that's not suspicious at all, Jay.
He said he was coming to check because he heard gunshots, but then gets stabbed in the back by a killer and that no one noticed just approach him from behind, and mm-hmm. they run off.
And it suspiciously never actually shows any stab wound on him, Jay. Crazy.
He just falls to the ground. Sarah runs off, and Ryan stays to fight the killer, maybe.
I guess.
He even tells her to run, but then he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, he's not using that pocket knife, I can tell you that, Jay.
We see a video camera recording the sheriff getting out of his cruiser and looking at a dead body, and then a killer with a gun knocks him out from behind with the butt of the gun. Sheriff Hank comes to, tied to a tree, and there are two killers standing in front of him, one recording him and one just standing there.
Menacingly.
The sheriff taunts them, and they won't reveal who they are. And he's like, you fucking pussies, not showing me who you are. So then one of the killers goes and dumps gasoline on him, and immediately starts, I'm so sorry. Don't kill me. I'm afraid to die.
I want
to
live.
And it's just like, either have him be defiant to the end, or have hinted at that he's a giant kind of coward the whole time.
There should have either been character development towards cowardice, or just have him be a badass or whatever. Honestly, that's what I thought he was going to do at first, when he was like, oh, please don't kill me or whatever. I thought he was trying to lure him close so he could, like, headbutt him or whatever. But no, he's just dying like a bitch for some reason.
Sarah sees this and runs back into the woods as we hear the sheriff screaming as he's lit on fire.
You know, that would have been a cool thing to see, except for, you know, they cut, like, one little vision of it. It, like, obviously wasn't him on fire. It's just, like, a fire. And then they don't show anything else.
And then you get his burned corpse at the end of the movie.
Looks terrible, by the way.
Sarah sees one of the killers walking through the snow, so she knocks him out and bludgeons him to death with the flashlight, only to notice that his hands are tied. And it's Ryan!
Oh, no. Not Ryan.
Also, his mouth was taped shut. Sarah wanders aimlessly through the woods as she continues to be recorded. Sarah stumbles onto her dad's body, only for one of the killers to ambush her again.
Again, yeah.
Sarah is tied up again, mm-hmm. and two of the killers stand in front of her, both with clean masks, not a bloody mask. One of the killers removes their masks, and it's Jane, Tyler's mom, and she laughs maniacally.
Crazy.
And then the other one removes his mask, and it's Tyler.
Oh, my God. You mean it's the only group of two people that visited the cabin together, Jay? Wow.
He reveals he faked being killed and that he is obsessed with her, and they are meant to be together. He even mentions it is cliche to have the jealous ex be the killer. And if you feel the need to say that in your movie, maybe don't have the jealous ex be the killer. Maybe do something different.
Maybe a quick script rewrite to make this not the most boring generic thing ever.
If you are smart enough to be like, that's pretty cliche, then do something different.
It needs a twist.
Like, you're not winking at the audience. Yeah. You're not, you know, hey, you know, check out what we did. No, you're just, you made a bad movie and you're bringing attention to the fact that your movie is bad.
Mm-hmm. which, you know, sometimes can work, like in a more comedic thing, it could work a little bit, you know, like where you point out how stupid something is happening or whatever.
And right.
Like, you know, no one would ever do this if this wasn't a movie or whatever.
The Community Halloween episode where they're telling the ghost stories or the scary stories. Yes. And Abed's is just entirely like self-referential meta stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's funny, and Community is a comedy. This is not a comedy movie.
I don't know. I think, honestly, they were going for like a Deadpool-style thing in this at the end. It just didn't really work.
Tyler asks his mom to leave so he can be alone with Sarah, his fiance, after he replaces the ring Ryan gave her with one of his own.
Ugh.
So was his plan just to show up at the cabin and propose to her there, and it just so happened that Ryan was there?
I thought that could have been his plan, like he's been desperately waiting for her or whatever this entire time. But no, in his crazy rant, he reveals that the woman that went missing at the beginning was a girl that he was also dating, and she was not appreciative of enough of his, you know, m'ladying with his fedora, so she had to be murdered too.
Of his John Mayer singing and his rugged good line. That was a good line. Yes. That's one of my few quotes. Jane hauls the sheriff's body away, or tries to. While Tyler talks to Sarah, and a gunshot can be heard outside. Tyler goes to investigate and finds his mom, Jane, dead. Tyler unties Sarah and forces her into the police cruiser so they can flee, but the keys are missing.
Oh, no.
More missing shit in this movie.
Yes.
He goes out to look for them just to be shot, and Natalie stands there. Natalie and Sarah embrace each other and cry, and it turns to the camera recording. And the camera then turns towards the killer, and it's the killer with the bloody mask.
It's the deputy.
And it removes it. It's the deputy who kind of glares and then looks into the camera and turns it off. Credits roll.
Ugh.
What? Why was the deputy there? We don't know.
No one knows.
No one knows.
No one cares. There's never going to be a Lake Alice 2, so no one cares.
Any thoughts, or are you ready to dive into our categories?
Just to close out, the ending of this movie is such an anticlimax. It made me physically angry when I saw how it ended. But one thing that sticks out in this movie, it's like very bad, especially if you've actually shot guns or been around guns in real life. The gun sound effects they use in this movie are fucking terrible. They sound like cap guns going off.
Bang!
I'm like, have you ever been near a real gun? It's loud as hell. It's like, yes, at the end when she does the big shoot him from behind, now he's dead, I just got the killer, it's a
bang.
Yep, there you go. All right, now let's talk about how not Christmassy this movie is.
All right, let's start there. Christmas spirit, how Christmassy is the movie? How Christmassy are the kills?
Kills, not at all.
Not at all, other than you could say they're wintry. They're wearing parkas and ski masks.
Yes, it's a guy dressed up in a winter coat. Yeah.
But you cannot say that's Christmassy.
No, there's no creative use of any kind of Christmas decorations for kills or anything like that.
Movie, barely.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a Christmas tree and there are Christmas lights on the front porch.
Yes. So the two biggest Christmas things in this movie are, yes, there's some Christmas decorations around and they open presents. That's it. No other mention of Christmas. No, like, you know, this is our family Christmas tradition. Nothing like that.
But I will say, bonus points for having snow on, for actually filming on site and having snow on the ground for your Christmas horror movie in Wisconsin. A certain thing that another Christmas horror movie we'll have that takes place in Wisconsin should take a note about when it pops up.
I mean, why would you bother shooting in Wisconsin for a Christmas movie if you weren't going to do it in winter?
That's the thing. I don't know if this other one is in Wisconsin or if they just mention it's Wisconsin, but the fact that there's no snow on the ground in the other one makes you go, then why the fuck set it in Wisconsin in the first place?
It's a Midwestern state next to the Great Lakes. They have snow from like the end of October through like April. It'd be pretty weird.
I was gonna say the UP, I think, gets snow every month on record, has gotten snow every month but July, and this is like consistently every year.
But yeah, Christmas factor low.
Want to do quotes?
Sure.
one of the few good things I found in this movie.
I'll do my first one. It's her new boyfriend. Well, fiance, I guess. He's from California. And the deputy's like, that's unfortunate. And I kind of agreed with him.
Thanks for having me up here. It's really nice to finally meet you. This is Ryan talking to Natalie and Greg. It's great to have you here. We heard so much about you. That's Natalie. Ryan responds with, all good, I hope. And then Sarah goes, no, all terrible. And I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Greg, have a good night, David. Your fly's undone. David Reed. David Reed is the name of the deputy.
Yes.
I thought that was an okay line.
I had the only other memorable one to me was the, I cut you guys some extra firewood. So I heard it's going to be real cold next couple days, probably a snowstorm. We're all good on firewood. He says it just like that, too. I'm like, Jesus, why are you guys so mean to Carl?
Greg, what's your team? Ryan, Green Bay. Greg, good to know. I won't get yelled at when there's a game on. Hells yeah. Go Pack, go. Ryan, I'm definitely not jealous of your handsome John Mayer-sounding ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And then my last one is Tyler. And this was the quote where I went like, maybe it's the only like good thought put into this bland ass boring movie, like by the book slasher. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be me, and now it can be. And I just thought that was such a good line. And I'm like, that line would be better in a better movie.
Yeah. No. I would honestly, this concept was not bad. The execution is what fell down.
All right. Well, you ready to do what do you want to do next?
Christmas wrappings, I guess.
All right. Set design, costumes, etc.
Killer costume was okay. I thought it wasn't like amazing or anything, but it was a decent enough costume.
I thought the masks, the like very reminiscent, very similar to Secret Santa. I thought they looked better, although the Secret Santa ones were much more comedic.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, That one allowed for comedy and laughs. This one just allowed for me to go, okay, like, there's one that has blood on it, and then there's potentially two killers that don't have blood on their masks.
Just the plain mask without the blood kind of reminded me of the angel mask.
A little bit, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's nothing. It's not going to knock your socks off, but it's not going to make you go, eh, either.
Hey, they filmed in Wisconsin, and there's snow on the ground. That needs to be promoted as much as possible in this movie.
Yes, snow on the ground in a Christmas movie is good, especially if you're filming in a state that has a good Christmas snow record, like Wisconsin. Let's get to the elephant in the room, Jay. The cabin layout sucks. They don't give you any idea of like the layout of this thing before it starts. People just wander in and out of it, like we talked about, aimlessly. So no one really knows. It's like there's no, in a good movie, like in The Strangers, you're intimately introduced to like every room of the house or whatever, all the entrances and exits, and then you know like where they're going to go hide and how they play the game of cat and mouse running through the house. This one, you have like absolutely no idea. You know there's a kitchen and a family room and a garage, and that's about it, and you don't know how those rooms connect to each other.
And you don't know how many bathrooms there are, who's hiding in what bathroom.
It's like you don't know like who's staying in what bedroom or whatever. That's never established. So it's like there's no stakes basically to the killers stalking through the house, and they really don't even focus on it at all. Which to a movie that takes place mainly in one location, to not know the layout of the location is a pretty big flaw.
I does feel like small town Midwest. Like a lot of the things, like, you know, you and I both live in big town Midwest, but we've both been to small town Midwest. Yes. And
it's like I live in a rural area on the outskirts of Ames, and it's like, yes, I could definitely see this stuff being reminiscent. Like if I go 10 minutes north of me, I'm in a tiny town called Gilbert that gives heavy vibes from this town.
Like one coffee shop, there's one, like I said, maybe one, yes, maybe two gas stations.
There's a gas station that's just gas pumps from the ethanol company, and then there's a Casey's, and that's it.
Yeah. anything else? Or are you ready to do Broken Bulb, Brilliant Bulb?
I talked about the infinite camera battery earlier, but I was like, these are weird. They have an ATV or whatever, and they use it to go out to do his proposal, but it's never mentioned again. No one ever uses it to try to escape or anything like that.
Yeah, I thought that would come. In my memory of this movie, I was like, surely they get on the ATV. No, they don't.
I'm like, why would they bother setting that up to then not use it? Oh, well, nothing makes sense about this movie. So,
and the infinite camera battery, why are they recording it? Why do they care about any of that? That's why when you, I don't know if you said that on the air or off the air, thought maybe the boyfriend might be the killer.
Yes.
And so then you have that this is all being recorded. Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. That works along with what you're doing. This does not.
Yeah. No, it would have been a much better twist if the boyfriend had been the killer.
All right. Well, let's do Broken Bulb, Brilliant Bulb.
All right, if we have to.
All right. If you could fix one thing.
I'm going to require a lot more fixing than one thing, Jay. But if I could fix one thing, it would be a more development for the killers, because the killers are essentially absent. This is an hour and 18-minute movie, and the killers don't show up until 50 minutes into the movie. And by that point, you've pretty much lost interest, because there's no character development for anyone, but it's like there has to be some build-up, some menacing, other than somebody mentioning, oh, hey, the spare key is missing, and then that's all you get. You need to have these people, have talk in town, there's been some strange disappearances happening lately. You know, your stock, there's a slasher, a monster in the area thing. You know, have a couple of people have disappeared or whatever, but then have it maybe the person that disappeared could be one of the killers and they've just been going off grid, so they're not a suspect. Or, you know, have it been have the sheriff, even though he's an asshole or whatever, maybe he's investigating what happened with the girl at the beginning, and you get a little bit of a trail leading, maybe this guy could be the killer, I don't know. But no, you just get introduced to nine people, and then you immediately know, okay, so it's got to be one of these three, you narrow it down immediately. There's no development to the killer, and you don't even care, and then when he reveals his motivation, it's dumb. That has to be fixed. For a slasher movie to have a slasher you don't care about, if you don't care about the slasher's motivation and they're not a supernatural threat like a Michael Myers or a... Well, I mean, even Michael Myers has a motivation. Or a Jason Voorhees. I mean, he's got a general motivation to kill people at the camp he drowned at. It's these people basically have no established reason for killing people up until the very end of the movie. And then when you find out what it is, it's dumb.
And even then, why kill her parents? Why do any of this?
That makes no sense. Why kill the parents? Why kill the sheriff? The only thing I can think of is maybe the deputy wanted to be sheriff, and so they got rid of him. But you don't figure out he's even a killer until literally the last scene of the movie, so it makes no difference.
So I think, this is, my Broken Bulb's pretty much the same as yours. I think the deputy must have had some relationship with Sarah as well. Is she still a firecracker? Mm-hmm. Oh, she was a rebel. Clearly, Sarah must have had some relationship with the deputy as well.
Again, developing the killers, it would have been good to know that. Have somebody talk about it.
But instead, it's just ominously mentioned.
But they do that with everybody they meet, so it doesn't even make any difference. They could have done this. This would have been perfect. So they meet the first boyfriend or whatever, and he doesn't get all bent out of shape about that. He's just he was just a high school boyfriend or whatever before he left town. Not a big deal. But then, when he goes into town later with the dad, have the deputy lay out more, I used to date her or whatever. And then he's like, Jesus, has everybody in this town dated my girlfriend or
whatever? So then that was my question. I was like, if either have it be one killer, have it be the deputy, have that be revealed. Or flesh out... Yes. Why all these things are happening. There is just too much going on. It's too convoluted. And you're left with no real answer.
And it's why is the mom doing this? There's no answer to that. It's my son can't be with this girl that he likes. That's not generally you jump to going into a ski mask and parka and murdering a family. It's where was the bridge between those two things?
Also, can I ask, Why is everyone a dick to Greg? Why does Greg hate everybody in the town? Why are they back here if everyone in this town hates everyone? Yes,
they act like no one likes them being here, except for the mom or whatever acts like she's happy, but then she scowls when she turns away or whatever.
Did the mom have a relationship with the sheriff, and that's why the sheriff is mad that they're in town?
That's never laid out.
There's no answer for why all these people are just assholes to each other for no reason. Was the sheriff and Carl vying for the mom's affections and Greg won out? It was there's something about Mary kind of situation, and she picked Greg over all the other people.
You see, Jay, that would make this movie interesting, and you can't do that.
and it's there's like the motivations are just so absent.
Yes. It's like, you can't care about these characters. With the amount of information you give about them, you don't care when these people get killed. And two, you don't care why they're being killed because there's never any explanation given. And it's like, in a slasher movie, that is like a huge, huge problem. It's like, if I don't care, it's like, because even if I hated the characters, that would work. Like a Thanksgiving-style cast [S2] Right. [S1] Of killables. But you don't even hate these people. You're just indifferent to them because they have no personality.
Also, my wife was like, wait, so is the implication, she's like, is the implication that Sarah also slept with the sheriff? Is that why the sheriff hates her? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know
what's going on. That's as good of an explanation as any. Obviously, she's obviously slept with at least two people in the town. So.
Maybe it's just one. I don't know. We're trying to piece this together. Like, throw us a fucking bone here.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
All right, brilliant, Bulb. Every movie has one thing that you should be able to praise. Jeff, do you have anything to praise for this movie?
Yeah, I found a great thing to praise about it, Jay. It's only an hour and 18 minutes long. And then it's over, even though it feels like 3 hours.
That was the worst part, was I was just like, there were multiple times where I'm like, oh, I've got to be making progress. And then I'd like pause it to go do something. And I'd look and I'm like, how do I have 40 minutes left? Mm-hmm. How do I have 20 minutes left?
I mean, I was literally watching it at work and I was too bored of the movie. I was like, I would rather work.
My brilliant Bulb, and I know you kind of disagree, I think all the people were competent enough actors. I don't think any of them were great. But I'm currently in anticipation of watching Final Destination Bloodline.
Oh, no.
My wife and I are rewatching the Final Destination movies. And we just finished Final Destination 3 the other day, like yesterday. And it needs to be said, like, I all the Final Destination movies are solid. Final Destination 3 is probably the weakest of the ones so far. I think it has two very iconic moments, and I think the rest of the movie is pretty weak. But Mary Elizabeth Winstead is the most annoying fucking person in that movie. And I was sitting there, I was like, well, at least we don't have Mary Elizabeth Winstead just doing like the worst fake cry you've ever fucking heard. Yeah. Like, at least the crying sounds kind of like crying, even if it's just two people like
shrieking constantly
at each other. It's still better than Mary Elizabeth Winstead being like, Sydney! Like, just fucking constant. Like, every time she did it, I'm just like, why the fuck does she keep doing this? Like, this is awful. And then I was like, wait, she was in Black Christmas 2006. Does she do that same thing in Black Christmas 2006? I've not gone back to rewatch it, but if I do, when she I is. Do, I'll leave an update about what happened if she does the weird, like,
I can almost guarantee she does.
But yeah, I was just literally every time she did it, it just took me out of the movie, and I'm just like, why? Like, why is this the take we're continuing to go with?
Is 3 the roller coaster?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I tanning bed scene, great. Mm-hmm. Love the tanning bed kills. The finals, the spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Final Destination 3, the final scene in the subway, awesome. Love that moment. I think that's great. Everything else is pretty fucking bad. Even the roller coaster, there are more interesting things you could do, I think, with a roller coaster killing people. And instead, all it is just people falling out of the roller coaster, and I think you get one person maybe gets split in half and you get another person impaled on a rail and that's it. And I'm like, but like, I don't know. I think you could have done more interesting things with the roller coaster kill.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, we're talking about a different movie. Yeah. So we don't have to talk about this one. Yeah. I should tell you everything you need to know.
No, that's a good point. Let's round into our final destination. Final. God damn it. Yeah. Let's round into our final ranking. Every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we rate our movie on one of three categories. Is it ho, ho, hilarious? Is it seasonally scary? Or is it You'll Be Sorry? Jeff, take us away.
You'll Be Sorry. This movie does not have anywhere close to enough to redeem it. It's a slasher movie with almost no gore and no slashing until the last 20 minutes of the movie. And by that point, there's been so little character development and so little motivation revealed for the killings that you don't even care what's happening. And you just wish it would be over. And somehow, even though it's only an hour and 18 minutes, it feels like a 2.5-hour movie. There's nothing I can recommend about this that you can't get better somewhere else. This is like somebody put into ChatGPT, write me a slasher movie set in Wisconsin at Christmas. And this is what it spit out with all the basic generic tropes. That's what this feels like. This needed probably two or three rewrites to get to where it should have been shot.
I agree. You'll be sorry. I think this had potential to be like a Strangers at Christmas, even though you and I have talked. My idea for Strangers at Christmas would be setting it in a like decked out mall, like outdoor mall for Christmas, as opposed to doing a cabin again. But I think this had the potential to be that. It's not. It's really boring. The motivations are muddled / non-existent. The exterior lighting is on par with the Night of the Comet and To All a Good Night, where like they maybe put like a gel over the top half of the screen so it looks like it's dark out, even though it's clearly the sun shining. The effects / kills are disguised, so you don't even really get to see any gore. Yeah. The only real gore you get to see is the nasty head wound on the mom. Mm-hmm. When the action starts, the movie actually slows down.
Yes.
Which it should be the opposite. It is constantly just people running into and out of the cabin. Just a bad movie. Don't watch.
Yeah. There's no reason to watch this.
But Jeff, did you stop to think that, maybe we're wrong?
Apparently we must be, Jay.
Yeah, we're idiots.
I didn't have any problem finding glowing endorsements of this movie.
Yeah. It's closed for Christmas. Oh boy.
I've been dreading this. You want to start or me?
I said to you, I couldn't. I was like, there's no way there are good reviews of this movie, because like on initial searches, I went, oh, like I didn't see anything good. It was just people being like, what the fuck is this movie? And you're like, oh no, they're out there. And I went and looked, and sure enough, they are.
Oh, you starting or me?
Yeah, I'll start.
Okay.
A horror slasher and mystery film that surpassed all of my expectations. 10 out of 10. This is from IMDb.
Low expectations, I guess.
Lake Alice is a slasher and mystery movie. About a young couple and the girl's parents who go up to their cottage for Christmas. But once two serial killers start killing the family, questions get raised. And who are these killers and who, if any, survive? This horror film surpassed ever expectation I had for it. I watched this one with super low expectations because on Tubi, there have been a lot of horror films that are currently being crowdfunded that absolutely suck. I'm not saying all of them suck, but at least 95% of them do. As of right now in 2023, anyone with a camcorder and a bunch of friends can call themselves a filmmaker. But this horror movie is a diamond in the rough. The fact that I found this on Tubi really surprised and shocked me, because it's done very professionally. Great cinematography, amazing acting, and the special effects are very realistic.
Oh my god.
And both the movie script and the directing is spot on. This is a golden horror slasher and mystery film. I don't think many people have seen this one, and that's a shame. Most horror fans aren't movie buff / film buffs, so they have extremely low standards for horror films these days. This one needs a sequel, and I'm not kidding. This is how horror movies should be made. Just like with the Scream movies, there's the guessing game of who the killers are, and I really enjoyed that element. This horror movie is brutal, savage, and very grisly, bloody, and gory for a rating of TV-14 on Tubi. I strongly recommend this movie. There's a lot of great scenes, and the first kill is awesome in this movie. No, it's not.
No, it's lame. It's super lame.
I don't even know what... Is she saying the first kill is Greg? Which, no. Or is she saying that it's Julie at the beginning of the movie? Which also no. Awesome. She just gets dragged away. As is awesome in this movie, as is the rest of the film. Written by Bailey Gianni, and then in parentheses, she put film buff, cinephile, and online film critic. Bailey, someone needs to...
I'd say, Bailey, I think somebody missed a tag on your post. It should have been, and also recipient of a lobotomy.
Like, you felt the need to put your own name on this. Like, this, you're opening yourself up to ridicule with the review.
You're
like
posting
this.
It on a public website with your name. So, I mean, no, just no to that entire thing. None of that is true. Don't believe that if you try to watch this movie.
The one thing that is true, the one thing I will give it, is that there are a lot of poorly made crowdfunded movies out there.
Yes.
There's also a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, low expectations because Tubi, there's some great movies on Tubi. It's got nothing. Tubi is not like a mark of bad quality. They have like blockbuster movies on there.
And they also have like good solid like diamonds in the rough.
Yes, they've got tons of good indie stuff. You just got to know how to find it. Which I'm a self-proclaimed cinephile and movie connoisseur should know how to do.
Well, Jeff, you know us as horror fans slash film buffs, so we have extremely low standards for horror movies. Yeah, you're right. That's why Sinners is being like universally praised right now.
All right, Jay.
Or The Substance last year.
Yeah, true. Very true.
Go ahead.
10 out of 10. Despite being a lesser-known entry in the horror thriller genre, thriller, now we're stretching it, Lake Alice stands out as a taut, psychologically driven slasher.
I wouldn't say taut. I mean, I guess if you look at the runtime, sure. But
that excels in tension, atmosphere, and character-driven dread. It may have flown under the radar, but this indie gem earns a perfect score for its ability to take a familiar setting and turn it into something disturbingly intimate, emotionally compelling, and relentlessly unnerving. And just in case you thought you were getting out of this with one paragraph, Jay, this is broken down by category, and it's like 2 pages long.
Oh, Jesus, fuck.
So strap in. Atmosphere and setting. Set in a snowy, isolated Wisconsin cabin, Lake Alice establishes a suffocating atmosphere from the first frame. The wintry, I guess I didn't find it suffocating because I live in a similar place. The wintry landscape is both beautiful and desolate, but it's not at all.
It's literally the first scene is them in a parking lot of a bar and grill, and there are people walking in and out. It's not desolate.
Even the cabin literally has neighbors. Whatever. Yes, wintry landscape. The wintry landscape functions as a silent antagonist throughout the film.
No, it doesn't.
Cinematographer Sean Hart makes excellent use of long static shots and chilling stillness, basically saying the movie is boring, creating an overwhelming sense of surveillance, as though something unseen is always watching.
I think I said to you off the air, but I'll say it here. The one thing I think the cinematographer did right is when Tyler is revealed to be the killer, he's suddenly always shot from below, where previously was always shot at eye level or above. Mm-hmm. And when he's shot from below, he looks like a different actor. He looks like a different person. And I'm like, that's really interesting. I don't believe you did that on purpose based off of everything else I've seen in this movie.
There's like a 0% chance of that being on purpose. The environment isn't just a backdrop, Jay. It's part of the film's psychological assault.
No, it isn't. Literally, it doesn't matter that it snowed out. No one talks about being cold or getting hypothermia.
No one except for Carl, who's trying to save him.
Right, yeah.
Story and pacing. The narrative begins with an unassuming family holiday. Ryan accompanies his girlfriend Sarah to their remote cabin. This is where the film slowly begins to unravel its narrative. What appears at first to be a domestic drama, complete with overprotective parents and awkward interactions, evolves into a harrowing descent into fear and paranoia. Lake Alice flips the conventional slasher formula on its head. Instead of rushing to violence, it builds dread incrementally, allowing each character's raw vulnerabilities to be exposed. And when the killing finally begins, they're brutal and unflinching, but they feel earned through psychological groundwork rather than cheap shocks.
Literally, this movie has constant jump scares.
But where Lake Alice truly excels is its characters, Jay. Unlike many horror films that reduce people to archetypes, this film gives us individuals with believable flaws and motivations. Michael Seamus Wiles delivers a standout performance as Greg Thomas, the protective father whose suspicion of his daughter's boyfriend is both overbearing and deeply human. Well, I will say he probably did give the best performance in the movie. Brandon Eaton plays Ryan with nuance. He's sympathetic, awkward, and perhaps hiding something. It would have been cool if he was hiding something. His psychological arc is the biggest bite in the film. every relationship in this film feels lived in, and that realism makes the unfolding horror all the more effective. Beneath the surface, Lake Alice explores control, fear of outsiders, and the disintegration of perceived safety. This film taps into primal human fear.
This needs to be said real fast. Michael Seamus Wiles is the sheriff.
Well, can't win them all, Jay. Can't win them all.
So. I was sitting there, I'm like, I'm pretty sure his name's Peter O'Brien. I went back and checked my notes. It says Peter O'Brien. Went out and Googled his picture.
No, Jay.
That's Michael Seamus Wiles.
This is an in-depth review by a brilliant reviewer. You can't be wrong. Anyway. The direction is restrained but razor sharp. Anyway, we're skipping to the final verdict. I'm tired of this. Lake Alice is a slow-burning, emotionally intelligent horror film that delivers on every front. It combines the quiet paranoia of The Lodge with the brutal finality of The Strangers, all while maintaining a uniquely intimate tone. It doesn't rely on cheap scares or gore for shock value. Instead, it roots horror in human relationships and the fragility of trust. For horror fans who crave substance over screams, Lake Alice is an underappreciated masterpiece. It's haunting, gripping, lingering, gripping, lingering in your mind long after the snow has melted. A chilling, character-driven horror triumph. Ugh, God.
Wow.
I'm gonna die.
I guess sniffing his own farts.
Well, he doesn't even remember what actor played what character, so there's that.
8 out of 10 for an in the woods slasher. This is much smarter than your average bear. Yes, the people who keep running in and out of the cabin.
Oh yeah, they're geniuses, Jay.
For every 300 horror stories filmed, there may be one which is worth your time and attention. Look no further.
I mean, I think you could say that pretty much about movies in general, but
this movie was riveting and extremely well acted. The cast were obviously committed to their roles, and the script, direction, and photography was first class. 45 minutes cruised by before the first victim fell, which is fine because it gives the audience 45 minutes to enjoy the tableau.
Oh my God.
It also creates 45 minutes to establish the character and no fewer than 5 suspects, one of who we imagine will be the eventual killer.
There are like 3 suspects and there's a pair.
And they're all the killer.
Yes.
I don't ever reveal spoilers. Suffice to say, the ending is a surprise and ultimately a gratifying conclusion. No, it isn't.
I'm calling this right now. This guy didn't even watch this.
I have to say, though, that in my 3 visits to Wisconsin, I have never witnessed mountains as portrayed in the cover shot. I don't doubt their existence. It was probably overwhelmed by the pastures, the livestock, and the mosquitoes. Enjoy. I agree. I don't think there's mountains, but there are big hills.
Yes, there are. There's literally the Wisconsin Dells, which are rolling hills. Yep. Yes.
Which, I mean, yes, I agree. It's not like a mountain, but no, right. You do. Which there's I did see. I think they used shots from Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah, the B-roll shots. Well, that was soul-crushing, Jay. But guess what? There's a review.
Oh, count Orlocks here.
There's a certain kind... Yes, Jay. I need to find the review of this movie so I can get laid.
I can't wait till we do that movie because it's a Christmas movie.
There is a certain kind of horror film that doesn't announce itself with bombast or bloodshed. It creeps in. It listens rather than shouts. It observes its characters not as victims to be, but as people who carry the quiet burden of secrets, fear, and fraying emotional threads. Lake Alice is such a film. Modest in scale, patient in execution, and all the more unsettling because of how carefully it withholds. Lake Alice is ostensibly a cabin-in-the-woods slasher. We've seen the blueprint before. A young couple joins the girl's family for a snowbound Christmas retreat in rural Wisconsin. Tensions rise. Somebody's stalking the house. Blood is eventually spilled. But the mechanics of the genre are beside the point here. What matters, what lingers, is the film's unwavering commitment to atmosphere, ambiguity, and character psychology. We open with Ryan, a young man invited to meet his girlfriend's family for the first time. The Father Greg is suspicious, sizing Ryan up with a stern mix of interrogation and veiled aggression. He doesn't really do that, but okay. The mother plays the reluctant peacekeeper. Not really. It is in many ways a domestic drama before it is anything else. And that is where Lake Alice distinguishes itself. The screenwriter, Stevie Jane Miller, is not in a hurry. They give us time to study the small hesitations, the misread gestures, the way Sarah's smile fades when her father says too much. We sense unspoken histories between these characters. Sure would have been nice for some of them to be spoken. And that emotional opacity becomes the film's true source of tension. The fear doesn't come from outside. It seeps up through the floorboards. The cinematography is crisp and restrained. The snow-covered wilderness is at once beautiful and ominous. There are wide shots where the cabin feels like the last warm place in a cold, uncaring world.
No, it doesn't.
And there are close-ups, lingering, unblinking, that remind us just how fragile trust can be. When the horror elements do arrive, and they do, they're not garish or gratuitous. They are brutal, yes, but grounded in an emotional stake that the film has carefully constructed. The violence in Lake Alice is not the point. That's kind of a problem if you're in a slasher movie.
Yep.
It's the inevitable consequence of long, festering tension finally breaking loose. The final act is savage, sorrowful, and shot through with a terrible clarity. To describe the ending, I'm convinced none of these people have watched this movie. To describe the ending would spoil what makes the film so powerful. Suffice it to say that Lake Alice leaves us not with triumph or closure, but with silence. The kind of silence that demands reflection. There will be viewers who dismiss this film as too slow, too ambiguous, too boring, not really a slasher movie.
Shit.
They know. It's us. But I believe Lake Alice is a masterclass in minimalist horror. I love how in the last 5 years, every piece of shit now is called minimalist. You see, Jay, I made a minimalist movie, which means I didn't really make one at all. But I get credit for it.
I'm gonna make this minimalist podcast. I'm just not gonna release it.
Yeah. No. We release an episode, but it's just 50 minutes of dead air.
How about an hour and 18 minutes and like 30 seconds of dead air?
No, Jay. It's an hour and 18 minutes of dead air, and then the last 30 seconds, I come on and go, "This has been a commentary on society," and then it ends. Okay, it knows that true fear resides not in monsters or masks, but in what people think we know best, in the eyes across the dinner table, in the things we don't say when the snow begins to fall. A chilling, understated triumph.
See, I think you could have done something interesting with that.
But this didn't do that.
But then don't make it a slasher movie. Instead, have it be like the family's growing paranoia. Yeah. Or something. No. Instead, it's this.
You know what movie does the things that these people are describing? The Leech.
Yep. No, exactly. All right. Here's my last one. 7 out of 10. Well, I liked it. I love horror and I love whodunits. Becoming a 50-something grandma has not changed my preference for good horror. My favorites are The Witch in the Window, best horror ever made, Terrified, which I think is an Argentine film. Dark Was the Night, Don't Look Now from 1973 with Donald Sutherland, The Witch, which I assume is the Vavitch, Caveat, and most of James Wan. This film is far from those. Here's my favorites. This movie's nothing like that. 7 out of 10. However, it is by no means bad. In fact, I found it quite good. The actors are fine. The scenery, suspense, the cold weather, the Christmas theme, the buildup, the killings, the twist, the lovely cabin. I liked all of it. I will say, I mean, none of that's right, but the Christmas theme, there's barely any fucking Christmas in this goddamn movie.
Yeah.
No annoying teens. Which, okay, sure, I'll give you that.
It's just annoying 20-somethings instead.
Which, once again, but I love the annoying teens because I want to watch them get killed.
Exactly.
No plot holes.
Yeah, okay.
Likeable main characters. I want them to survive, and I care about them. Especially one scene, which has to do with mistaken identity, was heartbreaking to watch.
Was it? I thought that was the funniest part of the movie.
No, it's not. And we've seen that scene. We literally saw that scene a month ago in Slaughter High, where she where she thinks she killed the jester, what fucking big hog dude.
Yeah.
And instead she killed like the her boyfriend or whatever.
Yep.
No, it's not brilliant, but it is decent. I'd rather watch this than a snorefest like Saint Maud, a movie people loved, or Amulet, which I've not heard of. So there you go. There's my last review.
That sounds more like a 5 out of 10, not a 7 out of 10, but whatever. Oh, Jay, I found a masterful review that was written on a break. I don't know how I would know that, but it was written on a break. The Ghost of Roger Ebert. Have you heard of this reviewer, Jay? I've heard he's insanely handsome and has a huge hog.
Just like the guy from Slaughter High.
Yeah. 0 out of 10.
Where's the beef?
Lake Alice bills itself as a horror thriller, but it's more accurately described as 80 minutes of dead air wrapped in a paper-thin plot with characters so bland they make cardboard look charismatic. With no tension, no coherence, and no reason to care, this film manages to waste a promising setting, a decent cast, and the viewer's time in equal measure. The movie opens with a young couple joining their family for a Christmas holiday in a snowy cabin. You think that would lead somewhere. Surprise, it doesn't. There's no story. It's just awkward family conversations, stilted attempts at conflict that go nowhere, and long stretches of nothing happening. When the horror finally arrives very late, it's rushed, nonsensical, and devoid of any emotional impact. The film pretends to try to build suspense, but it's all misdirection with no payoff. Even the twist, if you could call it that, feels like it was pulled out of a hat at the last minute. It's the narrative equivalent of wandering through a dark forest for an hour, only to fall into a shallow ditch and break your neck. Every character in Lake Alice feels like a stock photo of a human being. The protective dad is the usual cliche. There's the awkward boyfriend with all the emotional range of a park bench. The daughter reduced to a blank-faced scream machine as soon as the horror finally starts. And the supporting characters, they just kind of wander in, like almost like they came from another movie. Dialogue is unnatural and forced. Any attempt at character development is drowned in silence or meaningless small talk. You don't root for anyone. There's no chemistry, no tension, just lots of eye-rolling awkwardness. The pacing is abysmal. The first 45 minutes are filled with long, dull shots of nothing happening. Tension never builds, it stagnates. When the violence suddenly kicks in, it's sloppy and incoherent. It's like the filmmakers realized they only had 20 minutes left, and they're like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be a slasher movie. The bizarre mix of glacial pacing and rush payoffs and the result is frustrating at best and maddening at worst. My final verdict, Lake Alice is the cinematic equivalent of watching paint dry. If the paint was also whispering a bad mystery story while occasionally screaming in your ear for no reason. It's a film that promises horror and delivers boredom. It squanders every opportunity it has with poor writing, mediocre to lifeless performances, and the kind of direction that feels like it was done from a safe distance. Even diehard horror fans will struggle to find value in this. There's no catharsis, no creativity, and no reward for enduring the painfully dull setup. If you make it to the end, it won't be because you were engaged. It will be because you were too stunned to reach for the remote. A joyless, empty exercise in how not to make a horror movie.
Yeah. Also, Slaughter High. Man, Jeff, I don't think we've taken our victory lap.
I don't think we have.
We released our Slaughter High episode. Very next day, they announced a Slaughter High novel coming out next year.
Well, you know, Jay, I think it's about time people realize that the horror community takes its cues from this podcast.
Three different people sent me that like Slaughter High was getting a book the day after we released the episode, and I'm like, yep.
We moved the needle.
We clearly have pull.
Yes. Let's just say we're a podcast with weight, Jay.
There's a lot of that. We throw that around quite a bit. Jeff, let's take our villains and stick them on our naughty list, right down at the bottom where they belong.
Yes. This is a Terrence Shade from Barricade level villain. Chris Massacre, we talked about that a little bit.
I think these people would get dog walked by the people from Chris Massacre.
Oh, easily. No, I'm fine with putting him below them.
Yeah, like I think you said to me, Terrence Shane could probably kill a couple of them.
Yeah,
and I agree. I think maybe one of them might kill him, but no, otherwise yes. the other two would get killed.
The only reason they would beat him is because it would be 3-on-1.
So yeah, so just because of that, they are right above him.
Now, if Brooklyn Santa and his accomplice were in this thing, they would have slaughtered these clowns.
Yeah, like it's so fucking bad.
Oh my God, could you imagine turning the man himself loose on these?
Our patron saint would
absolute muppets.
they would just be like piles of like ground beef, like on the ground, just Simon Phillips's power level, just destroying them as he powers up.
Of course. That's when he chugs a fifth of whiskey at once.
All right. Well, Jeff, it's time for a little bit of this.
Garbage day!
Huh?
No!
We got an email.
Oh, no.
Hold on. I'm going to pull this up on my phone. It might be a little easier to read.
Jay Logsdon forgot his spectacles. Now he can't see his computer screen.
Titled The New Studio. If you haven't got a chance, go out to TikTok or Instagram, and I posted a little video of the studio with the fog music, because, I mean, fuck yeah, the fog.
Yeah, why not?
And I've put a few more things away. It's still a big old mess in here, but we're getting there.
It's what we like.
It's from Spencer, our number one fan. Hey, Jay and Jeff. I wanted to be the first email read in the new studio. The film on Instagram looks amazing. But get an air conditioner in there so you guys are comfortable. Kicking off the return episode with Christmas Bloody Christmas was a great idea. The wheel chose well. And I can't wait to hear what you guys review in the future. The Google and Reddit reviews are hilarious, and your reactions to them actually make me laugh while I'm driving. There are a lot of horror movies coming out soon, and two in particular look awesome. Dangerous Animals, and of course, M3GAN 2.0, which has the potential to be one of the best horror comedies in recent years. This weekend in New Jersey is Chiller Theater, where we met up last year, and I definitely want to head to Des Moines for a convention sometime in the future so we can hang out again. I just joined a Facebook group called Horror Movie Addicts, and I tried twice so far to get a picture of your card posted, but they wouldn't approve it. Finally, I got them to post a Black Christmas picture and then lauded you guys in the comment section. Hopefully this will bring more Christmas horror movie fans to your podcast. I'm not giving up on the card, though, because your logo rocks. Good luck in the new studio, and get that P.O. box going so I can send you some horrible tasting expired snacks to torment Jeff with. Just kidding, but seriously, get the P.O. box so you can do an audio-only unboxing episode or segment. Your number one fan, Spencer.
And that's why, see, that kind of legwork is why Spencer continues to be the number one fan. I can get emails from anybody else that listens to this damn show talking about promoting us on other pages.
Right, yeah. Get out there, listeners. Yeah.
Fucking listeners.
Or don't. I mean, we're lazy fucks too.
No, Jay. They need to work.
But, Jeff, if you thought you'd get off that easily.
Oh, no. Oh, here I was, dropping my guard because there was an email this time. But yes, it would be nice to be able to meet up with you, Spencer.
Some guacamole Doritos. No.
Aren't these... God, why? These are supposed to be tariff, Jay. There's only one place guacamole comes from, we all know.
And some the Little Caesars exclusive Mountain Dew Mango Rush. Dew with a blast of natural and artificial mango sweet heat flavor.
As soon as I saw that, I knew you were going to do this to me. I knew this was coming.
Actually, I was kind of dragging my feet about this, and then my wife was like, you need to get this and make Jeff drink it. Orange can, only comes in a can, has the little Caesars guy on it.
16 ounce, yes.
Caesar, yeah. I assume.
I hope so. All right, here we go.
I'm not really getting heat.
Tastes like bland lemonade.
I'm getting mango. I'm not getting heat.
No, pretty bland.
I think I'm most disappointed by that. I think I don't know. It's kind of like a mango-y Mountain Dew. It's kind of the...
That's pretty much it, yeah.
There's a, once again, Barntown. I was going to say there's a local bar. I've dropped it by name before on the spot. Barntown does a spicy pickle beer. Mm-hmm. Fucking delicious and tastes like you're drinking like spicy pickle brine.
You tried the peach and chong?
I have. That one's pretty solid.
I like that one.
And I was like, oh, this one will be hot. This will kind of be like that, a spicy kind of soda. No, it just tastes like
nothing.
Like Mountain Dew.
It tastes like you put some seltzer water in a can in the same room as a mango.
Man, I was really hoping for that heat to come through. Maybe there's a little bit, like right at the end, but it's not that apparent.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't call it sweet heat.
All right, well, Dorito guacamole.
Guacamole.
The perfect pairing with Mountain Dew, so that's why I grabbed the...
good. Good.
Enjoy the zesty bite of Doritos. Doritos chips with a refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew for a bold summer pairing.
Bold.
Remember when Doritos ads were, you're bold, but are you daring?
Yes. That's what screams bold to me, Jay, is two fat guys drinking Mountain Dew and eating guacamole Doritos.
In a room surrounded by physical media.
We're bold, Jay. Doritos says so. You need to post that as an endorsement on our Instagram. Like, Doritos says this podcast is bold.
Yep.
With crisp flavor.
I'm gonna take a picture. You know... I mean, I don't think these are bad Doritos.
No.
I don't really think it's guacamole, so I don't, I never think guacamole has, like, avocados don't really taste like much. Mm-mm. And so, like, guacamole tastes like tomatoes and onions and cilantro and lime, because the rest of it is all avocado. And I will say, these are decent Doritos, except they don't really taste like much, because they're supposed to taste like guacamole.
Yeah. About the same conclusion. Not bad, but nothing really to say.
Like, I don't think I would reach for these, but I wouldn't, like, if someone was like, oh, all I got is guacamole Doritos, I wouldn't be like, well, I'm not gonna eat that. Like, no, mm-hmm. They're good. Like, yeah. But they're nothing special.
Good enough. I mean, they're better than the Dew. I'll give it that. Oh, God. He was reaching for the cooler. I thought he had something else in there
nope,
for a second.
Nope, that's it. I'm trying to ration our way through the summer as best I can. Because then soon I'll have to start stockpiling for the spooktacular.
Yes.
Hashtag stockpiling for the spooktacular.
Well, you first need to hashtag our hot boy summer.
Oh, yeah. Hot boy, fat boy summer.
That's it. There we go. We're planning on doing a summer special anyway, Jay. We just call it Fat Boy Summer.
yeah. You know what? Might as well. We'll do Frogman. Why not?
Yeah. Fat Boy Summer. We can even do just like it's Fat Boy Summer. We'll do like 3 weeks in like July or whatever. They're like summer themed movies.
But one of them's Frogman, which we just want to watch Frogman.
Yeah, we're watching Frogman
for Fat Boy Summer. All right. Well, you heard that here first. I guess that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
At some point in like June or July.
Send some shirtless pics to the gram. Fat Boy Summer.
Oh, boy. People will love that.
Dorito crumbs all over myself.
All right. Well, if you want to send Jeff an email, make if you feel bad because Jeff was like, Spencer's the only one who sends us nice emails, mm-hmm. Send an email, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on social media. We are at Horror4Holidays. That's Horror the number 4 Holidays.
YouTube.com/HorrorForTheHolidays. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell. Thumbs up. Leave us comments. That's the best place to communicate with us if you don't want to write us an email. We're on all the podcatchers. You know the drill. Leave us 5-star review over there. And if you're a true fan of the show that hates us, put 5 stars, then the first line needs to be 0 stars if I could.
Yep. I would give this 0 stars if I could. Yeah, otherwise, tell a friend. That's probably the best. That is the first best way to spread word about a podcast that you enjoy, whether it's ours or whether it's another one. If you want to tell an enemy about our podcast, that's fine, too.
Yes. If you're listening to this show right now and you're like, God, these two fat idiots eating into the mic at the end of a bloviatingly long show is making me want to kill myself, then yes, send it to your worst enemy.
Yep. See how they feel about it. Otherwise, we're proud to be part of the Christmas Podcast Network. Yes. We hope to have I need to reach out and get something scheduled. We'll hopefully do a crossover episode at some point here in the near future.
Yes.
But check out all the other podcasts out there. Yeah, I don't know. There's all sorts of good ones. Totally Rad Christmas, yes, Seasons Eatings. Yeah. They're all good.
Check out, we have one crossover episode on Totally Rad Christmas you could check out, where we talk about one of the greatest Christmas horror movies of all time.
Oh, man. Someday we'll get, the wheel will bless us, and we'll get to watch it on this podcast.
Happy birthday, Christmas.
Oh. Amen. Amen. All right. Well, anyway, we'll see you next week with the stocking stuffer. Thanks for listening. Oh, Jeff fell asleep again. It's another Lake Alice situation.
Oh, no, not Lake Alice.
Okay. All right. We'll see you next week. Oh, gotta be quiet. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.